of knowing.
All right, Mal, welcome to Crow 777 Radio. This is hour one of episode 599. We got one more to 600. Jason Lindgren is with me and KL returns. Suffice it to say, if you want to learn some stuff that's true, that's accurate, you should probably tune into this. When I opened up the notes, I was very impressed to see the line that says, "Has anyone watched Game of Thrones or Vikings? These programs show exactly how feudalism, fiefs, lords, and titles were governed by the doctrine of necessity." Anyhow, welcome, Jason.
And a very lovely good morning.
Well, I'll tell you what, Kale, welcome back. I was going to list the episodes you've been on, but there are quite a few, and Rose is putting together a playlist, so there will be a KL playlist. Welcome back.
Well, thanks for having me. I'd like to first and foremost say my many thanks to you, Crow, to Jason, to Rose, the whole crew. 4 years ago is what we're going on now. And after I first got on your show, it has changed my life and it has changed hundreds, probably 1,000 people that I've helped. I help people during the COVID thing retain their jobs. I still do that a little bit today, you know, with places that require the shot and all that kind of stuff. But I've got so many people that I'm helping now, and it's given me an opportunity to do what I've always wanted to do, is help people in a more of a bigger way. So I just wanted to personally thank all of you for your hard work, your dedication, and allowing me to be on your show.
Well, hey, I think the thanks goes to you. You've got the boots on the ground, and how the heck you ever worked out some of this stuff, I can't even fathom. And I mean, you know me pretty well.
Yes.
I made a vow that I would keep this as long as I could to help as many human beings as I could, but I can't even help myself half the time. And you know that that's true. It's overwhelming, but I'm dedicated to this and we'll do it as long as we can. Jason, you want to mention anything before we hand it over?
Well, we were talking offline before we got on here. Things aren't free. So be really careful with what you're doing, because you just don't know what doors you might accidentally be kicking open, thinking that, hey, this is going to be awesome. And it turns out to be not so awesome.
I agree, with Jason. It's a buyer beware if it sounds so good to be true, those kinds of issues. But you're dealing with some stuff that could potentially be against the law. So that's why we offer that word of caution to make sure you do your research and that kind of stuff.
This is what I've noticed. And by the way, I knew people who were in the Freeman movement. All of them went to jail. And I mean all of them. And they weren't doing anything, well, at least their claim, that the government wasn't doing. But that was half of their reasoning. Well, you guys do it. But here's what I have noticed. People have done methods where they go in, they do things and like buy cars. The system accepts it. As a matter of fact, the system is even geared to do the paperwork, deliver the car, and it's a done deal. What I have noticed is if people went in, one or two of them, a handful of them, they did this once and walked away, maybe, and I put quotes around that, maybe that would be the end of it. But what tends to happen is a lot of people start doing it, and then one car isn't good enough. And before long, the hammer is going to fall. I guarantee the hammer is going to fall. And the way that they do it, and KL just informed us, is you get sued. And if you get sued, there's no way out from under that. You're getting sued. But the other thing I've noticed is the charges that are brought against you are almost impossible to defend. Maybe even difficult to find lawyers who could even deal with some of the things they bring against you. Anyhow, that's not what we're here to talk about. So KL, I'm just going to kick it over to you. You've got notes galore to get through here.
Yeah, I prepared these just a couple days ago because, you know, I'm trying to give people an idea of how all of this got started, what had to have happened years ago or even recently in order to have the outcome that everybody deals with. Because, again, I believe people have got a lot of cognitive dissonance going on where they know something's wrong. They can't put their finger on it. But they obviously know that nobody's playing, or the federal government for sure is not playing by the Constitution or the rules of the game. And it seems like there's a bunch of crooks running everything. And again, people are getting in trouble who aren't driving without plates and this kind of stuff. So I try to go back in time, you know, and I mean thousands of years ago, to get you to understand these principles and these concepts that the really, you know, powerful people on earth, which has usually been the rich people for a long, long, many centuries, how they control the masses and what they put into place with these concepts and how we get tied into it. And hopefully at the end, maybe offer some solutions on how to deal with this. Okay. I guess sent you guys some stuff, but I'll just go forward. You ready?
Yeah. And let me mention one thing. Does everyone remember the John Wick movie where the guy who was above everything, the high table, and everything, was some guy out in the desert?
Yes.
There are people in the world making claims that that is not far from the mark, and that some of the oldest people who were popes and other things, we're talking about the Farnese's, the Orsini's, the documentable oldest families in the world, apparently have Persian blood and other things. The point is, we can't prove how far back this goes, but there are people out there with very interesting research that are going to claim it goes all the way back to Babylon. Anyhow, whether or not that's true, rich people been kicking the can for a long time, and it's all you, KL.
Yeah, I'm going to give you a claim that somebody made in the 1300s that still is active today. That's how old that claim is. So I'm going to get into the history. You know, if you know me and listen to my tapes, I always give you a chronological kind of history lesson on how this works, and today's kind of going to be no different, okay? But, you know, some questions I had asked Crow, you know, that are on this stuff. Does anyone watch Game of Thrones or the Vikings? And the reason I always bring that up is because I know it seems like it's a fairy tale when you watch the shows. But I believe they're sending you a message, because that's exactly, almost to the T, how they're governing us today. Now, you might laugh and think that's crazy, but I'm going to try to explain that. Because, you know, in the Game of Thrones, you've got the king. You've got the king that grants land to the kingdoms. Okay, and Eddard Stark, the favorite character, he was the king of the north, but yet he had people underneath him. He was not responsible for the king, but he, because the king granted him land, you know, he became a beneficiary of a trust, basically. So he owed the king back service. Usually it was military service and or taxes and that kind of stuff. So I'll get into all of that as we go along. These programs show that how exactly feudalism is what I'm going to go over most of today. Fiefs, lords, land titles were governed by and are presently governed by. This should explain to you why you have to pay property taxes, why the state requires you to have tags and licenses, and let alone a driver's license. Okay. This whole thing stems from one of the concepts that ever since mankind has known, because I went even went back into the Roman days and it was there. Was something called the law of necessity. Now, the law of necessity, I think of as really like our Second Amendment, the right to defend yourself. Now, I think both of you guys and me would agree that, you know, if your life is in danger, you have the natural right. This is not a privilege from the government I'm talking about. I'm talking about a natural right to defend yourself. Would you both agree with that?
Of course.
Absolutely.
Okay, right. This is how they use it. Now, you know, in my life, it might have taken me a while, but I've also learned that anything good on earth can also be used for bad, and vice versa. Anything bad, like a gun, could be used for bad or could be used for good. Money can be used for evil, can be used for good. So there's this dichotomy that I've come to realize that it isn't one or the other. It's usually both. It's just depending on how it's being used. Water is good for humans, but you know what? You can actually die from too much water. So it doesn't seem like there's anything that there's an exception to the rule, but it's called the doctrine of necessity. I'm going to give you the definition. The basis on which extraordinary actions by administrative authority, that's the key, administrative authority, which are designed to restore safety and order. Such actions are to be presumed to be lawful, even if such action is unconstitutional, just like self-defense. Normally, if you kill someone, that's against the law. But if it was in self-defense, then it's not against the law. See, so it's the same principle as what I'm trying to tell you that's going on when they claim, the powerful people of the governments claim, that there is this law of necessity that we need to kick in because there's some national emergency that is preventing. The excuse they always give is they got to maintain law and order or the public safety. Okay. So if there's any chaos going around, which is normally they're the ones that are producing the chaos, they feel that they can invoke these laws of necessity, thus these extraordinary administrative powers or authority.
And where does the definition of what the necessity is come from? You know, that's the other issue here, right?
That's the problem. It's subjective. It's right. To whoever the government or whoever's invoking the law gets to decide what that subjective criteria is. That's the issue I have, because I always thought that when I first studied this, that, wow, they made a mistake in the Constitution. I understand, because I'll show you why when they put this in, but to me, that's the downfall. Everything that we've been dealing with since 1933 and prior to that is because of this national emergency law of necessity got kicked in. Okay. Some people also today call the law belligerent occupation, which is really going on in almost every civilized country on earth. That definition is the law belligerent occupation governs the relationship between the occupying power and the wholly or partially occupied state and its inhabitants, including refugees and stateless persons. So as an analogy, that we have a foreign power, foreign government, military occupation right now in the United States. They're occupying us, okay? We're the occupied state or the people. Now, that would also include just about everybody, even if you were here illegally. So refugees, people that have come across the border, anybody that is inside the jurisdiction thereof of the United States Corporation are subject to this administrative authority. That's the key. So it isn't like people get a pass. And I think Crow and Jason, hopefully now you understand why in my paperwork, we always say we're a pre-1933 citizen.
I say that. I use that.
Good. Now, everybody's going to say, well, this is corruption. This is illegal. No, it's not. This is constitutional. I'm going to repeat that. This is Constitution. Under Article 1, Section 9, Clause 2, the privilege of the writ of habeas corpus shall not be suspended unless when in cases of rebellion, invasion of the public safety may require it. Do you see? It's actually in the Constitution. It was written into the Constitution for such purposes. When they feel it's a national emergency, they can invoke it. Okay? It was important enough to our founding fathers to put it in. And I've looked at Spain, France, England, Ireland, Mexico, Venezuela. They all have it.
It's universal.
It's universal. They might call it the state of siege, but Hitler did it in 1933 at the same time, within a week of when we did it in 33. His state of emergency, then when he took over the Reichstag. France, they all do it. They all are invoking presently this law of necessity. Or also, again, people like to call it international law of war or this law of belligerent occupation. Because when you're being occupied, you're considered a rebel, a belligerent, or an enemy of the state. That's the three classifications of the military. All right. Now, at one time, the Roman Empire had been strong enough to keep pace and order in Europe. This goes back a long time. But when the empire started to decline, people had to find a way to protect themselves because a lot of Germanic tribes were overrunning parts of the Roman Empire. The people decided to place themselves under the protection of a powerful person, you know, almost like the animal kingdom, where all of the lions in a pride are under the protection of the male. Monkeys do it, baboons, ants and the queen. Everyone, it seems like the animals in nature give up something in order to be protected by a more powerful person. Now, if there's no real law running around, let's go back 700, 800 years, and there's, you know, anybody can rob anybody at any time, you would look to try to protect yourself and your family. And the only way to do this was basically this feudalism, which again, I will describe, where you put your protection, you were going to give up your liberties in order for security and protection from a more powerful person. Well, that more powerful person was normally somebody rich, or somebody that owned a lot of land and this kind of thing. So this actually became a way of government because they're like little pockets or almost like the mafia, where there's a capo, then there's this gangs underneath. Everyone's a step up to another gang or responsible to another one up the ladder. And again, it was all done for protection in those days. Now, they elect to protect by a dominant member in return for their protection. Yes, men would rather put themselves under the protection of a feudal lord than an emperor. Well, they thought it's kind of like decentralizing an empire. I know this sounds weird, but You know, when you had emperors, they just killed anybody or did anything they wanted. And actually, the emperors found it hard to get people to fight for them in wars. And under the feudalism system, because everybody owed everybody else along the line, there were many more men that owed their service, military service, to the guy up next to him. And then that guy owed it to him. And then eventually it got to the king. So the kings, after the empires, the kings were doing well because they could use this system in order to not only protect them, but to use in case they wanted to go and conquer somebody else. All right. So by 814, which is the early 800s, feudalism was the main system of government. Now, feudalism has been going on for at least 2,000 years that I could find. I'm going to describe that or define that. A landholding system in which the land is held in trust. In my other episodes, I've gone into at length about, even today, how that is true. An estate and land was conveyed from a feudal superior to a grantee or tenant in common. All you got to do is read your mortgage today, and it will, the buyer is considered or termed a tenant in common, which means the house isn't yours, you're just renting it. So you really have no rights other than possession. All right. It was a process by which individuals gave up their personal liberties in return for protection. I went over that earlier. It came about as a result of decentralized emperor rule. It was a combination of legal, economic, military, political, and cultural customs that flourished in Europe from the 9th to the 15th centuries. It is defined as a way of structuring society around relationships derived from the holding of land in exchange for service or labor. Indentured servitude, all of this stuff where most of the people that came over to America at the beginning, a lot were indentured servants, right? They owed something to somebody, right? If not included, the obligations of the nobility, but the obligations of the three estates of the realm, the nobility, the clergy, and the peasantry. It's centered around lords, vassals, and fiefs. Now, Crow, you watched Game of Thrones. I forgot the guy's name that was kind of the overweight guy that was bald that always gave advice to the king. Do you remember his name?
He was the guy who, he was a eunuch.
Yes, he was a eunuch, but he was very powerful because he had spies. But he always said, I'm loyal to the realm. In the show, if you go back and think about it, he was never said, I'm not loyal to the king, I'm not loyal to the queens, I'm loyal to the realm, which means the system of government. So that's why he switched from the queen down to Daenerys and then to John, because he wanted the system held in place. He knew that the leaders come and go. But if you go back and ever see that again, you'll see he always refers to the realm, which is talking about feudalism.
Viserys.
That's it. That's it. Okay. So I'll give you some more terms. Vassalage. Before a lord could grant land to someone, that was called a fief, by the way, he had to make that person a vassal. So the person who receives the land grants the vassal. This was done at a ceremony called commendation ceremony, a two-part act of homage, and an oath of fealty, which means, again, you got to swear an oath that you're going to protect the guy that's granting you the land. During homage, the lord and vassal entered into a contract in which the vassal promised to fight for the lord at his command, while the lord agreed to protect the vassal from the external forces and swears an oath to it. Now, again, Game of Thrones. This is where the term my lord comes from. How many times is not only the king my lord, but Eddard Stark is also my lord, and his wife is my lady. The phrase lord, my lord, or they would say it quickly going, my lord. So everyone was a my lord that had power and structure. The word lord, not in reference to religion, it's actually a term in feudalism, okay?
That is still used in British courts today for their judges.
There you go. It's still used today, yes.
With a costume.
A higher superior right over a subservient or inferior person. That's exactly right. Okay. So the vassal was the one who received the fief, which was the land grant and authority over it. In return, his sons all had to fight for the king. The other nobility and men in that kingdom had a similar arrangement to fight for Lord Eddard Stark. Now, again, remember in the Game of Thrones, all of those sub-families under Stark all had to vote and show their loyalty and oath that they were all going to go for Robb Stark now. Remember?
Fidelity, yep.
Right. All of them that were at that meeting, they were granting land to their people in their areas of the north. So you can see how this is just a very actually organized system But yet in that organized system, there are so many duties and obligations that tie you in if you want to have land in order to grow food and this kind of stuff. So it was like, to me, it was slavery, but it shows you the organizational mechanism that everybody was using. Okay. Now, if you also remember, the lords were judge and jury. If something became before them, they were the one to judge it, not really the king. If you remember, again, Eddard Stark had to execute one of his guys because he committed a crime. And he said, no, I have to do this to his sons. And he was the one that swung the axe and did it. So because the lords could do that, they could set what the laws were. And if you broke the law, he could enforce the law. He didn't have to ask the king to do it. This, again, just like in the mafia, every stepwise down, there's somebody that's going to take care of somebody if they step out of line. So, again, it was more, I look at it as a more mechanism of organization that maybe made people's life more stable, yet at the same time kept them in perpetual, or most of the people in perpetual poverty. So if a vassal broke his promise to the Lord could seize or escheat, I'll go over that term later, the property back and regrant the land to a more faithful vassal. Just like the king took the land away from Eddard Stark when he was found guilty of treason, he escheated, which means he took back the land grant because, again, he had the legal title to the land. He was allowed to do that. All right. He could charge them rents like property tax today. The Lord could seize weapons and horses if needed. So he could, even back then, they could control transportation, your crops. You might have to pay taxes or a percentage of your crop every year to the guy up to you. And then he would have to pay his share up to the guy to the crown. And then Lord Stark would have to pay it up to the king. So it was a stepwise thing again. Sopranos is another series where you could see that type of management going on every day. All right. Why do I go over this stuff? Well, these relationships for centuries have a direct impact on what's going on today. You know, if you want to know what's going to happen in the future, all you got to do is look to the past. You got to study the past to see what happened, because more than likely, it's a version of what they've already done 10 times over in the past, which is exactly, I'm telling you today, what's going on has been going on for centuries, and it's no different. It might be in a little different branding, but it's basically the same mechanism of control. So the feudal system gradually diminished after the 1300s. However, it obviously got reestablished in 1933, and we'll go over that. Today, we pay a property tax bill just like feudal fealty, and we owe income taxes to the state in a similar feudal relationship that we have to pay a percentage of our labor up the ladder to whoever granted us maybe the license in order to get to do the work. Okay, that was another mechanism that came about after 33 was licenses, whether it's a driver's license, a doctor's license, a plumber's license, electrician. All of those have fees, and you got to pay up, and let alone if you have it, that meant obviously you got to pay a percentage of your income in order to have that title, what that license allows you. And a license is really just permission from the government to do what you would normally do otherwise.
If the United States was actually founded with any of the ideas of freedom and other things that we were told, consider what a thorn in the side of these systems that instantly was. From the outset, this would have been a canoe going against the current.
Yeah, I'm actually going to get into that a little later. Webster's Dictionary states there's two kinds of ownership, both legal and equitable, which gets us into it. That means there's a trust going on. And the title of ownership is basically split into use and possession, one person gets, but the controlling interest, the other person gets. Like, again, the king might have the controlling interest in the land, but whether it's Lord Stark or if he grants smaller sections of what he was given into other people, you get use and possession of the land. And because you don't have that legal controlling title, that means it can be taken away from you at any time. You just get to use it, just like your home today. You get to use your home. You get to be in your home. But if you don't pay property taxes, guess what? The bank comes to repossess it. Look at the word they use. Repossess, which means all the bank really had was use of the, they don't have the legal title. They had possession, they gave it to you, but they can take it away. In a car, it's the same setup. The title is divided. You get use of the car, and if you don't put plates on it and don't register it, guess what? A policeman could pull you over and tow the car away. He can seize it. He can take it back. All right. So that's just my way of proving it. All of these are just trust agreements. So, you know, using the word trust and feudalism are all kind of similar terms that if I'm using different ones, it really means the same kind of thing. Now, if I remember right, the Catholic Church started around 800 AD. There was a really major event that happened in 1213 in terms of how it affects us today in America. In 1213, King John, was it? I'm trying to remember. King James? King John. So he's sitting in England. He has authority over England and Ireland at that time. And, you know, he sinned a lot in his life. And he approached the Pope, who's down in Italy, of course, said, hey, look, I really want to go to heaven. What can we do here? Can you help me out? So the Pope says, sure, I tell you what we're going to do. You grant over your controlling interest in all of the land in England and Ireland and all future land. The key word was future land. And I will make sure that your sins are redeemed and you'll go to heaven. Now, there's a written treaty on exactly what they did. So this isn't just hearsay. You can look it up. It's called the Holy Alliance of 1213.
What a deal, huh?
What a deal. The king gets off. Now, around 1213, something else really dramatic happened. 1215, isn't that the time of the Magna Carta, right? Where the barons kind of forced King John to sign that paper with all those rights, okay? What they probably never told you was within 2 years, the Pope had declared that the Magna Carta was null and void because the barons really didn't have the authority and neither did the king because he had granted that authority over to the Vatican. Okay, so the Pope then granted the land back to the... Now then the Pope grants the land back to King John under a feudal grant where England had administrative authority, but the Vatican retained legal title or controlling interest to all land controlled by the King of England. 1213, the Holy Alliance was a private trust treaty, making international trust law the highest form of law on earth, even today. It conveyed the British kingdom to the papacy under a feudal grant. This conveyance directly affects America today, although the United States did not come into existence for another 500 years. The Pope enjoys full feudal authority over all the land on earth via Jesus, you know, giving the keys to the church to St. Peter and then the 266 successors of St. Peter. Now, in 1308, I believe Pope Benedict makes a papal bull. I'll get into that later. I take it back. So they're making the claim, keeping the controlling interest, and they do this with all the other countries in Europe at the same time or in the next few years after they did it with King John. So this is why many people, including myself, really believe that the Vatican is where it ends. If you just follow the roads back to Rome.
Look at the coat of arms. I mean, those keys are there for a reason. If they truly are the landlords of everywhere, it makes perfect sense that those keys are on their coat of arms.
Yes. Yes. Because again, Jesus supposedly, if you believe in the Catholic religion, he gave the keys to St. Peter, and then St. Peter gave it to Linus. Linus had this, and then the succession of popes after that, okay? So even in the Bible, Genesis, God established a feudal lord-tenant relationship because, again, spiritually, if you believe in a creator like God, God created everything on earth. So we are here really just using it. We're a beneficiary of that trust agreement, that feudal land grant, that we're here to enjoy it, hopefully take care of it, maybe make it better for generations to come. But none of it is really ours in terms of owning the legal rights to it. It's just yours and nobody else's. I believe that we're just stewards. We're beneficiaries of this great trust that the Creator has given all of us because you sure can't take any of it with you. That's my opinion.
Well, even in the religious structure, the idea of a trust seems to be derived from that idea, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit.
Yep, it's the Trinity, which is the three tips of the triangle, which is the symbolism that of a trust is the triangle or the Trinity. Exactly what they, in fact, even in the 1783, I think the Holy Trinity is addressed in the first sentence. Anyways, in a letter from the Pope at that time, by right of lordship, this is right out of the letter, by right of lordship, by feudal right, making over in perpetuity to the Holy Roman Church, your kingdoms of England and Ireland to be held through the church, and of the church, subject to an annual payment of 700 marks for England and 300 marks for Ireland, for a total of $1,000 every year that they have to pay to the Pope kind of like a property tax. This document declares the contract between the king and the pope was legal and all binding parties, heir successors forever. Listen to that language. This being a private contract, no one can ever challenge or renege on the agreement. And if you notice, again, in our Constitution, also states, Article 1, Section 10, Clause 1, no state shall pass any law interfering with the obligations of contracts. So private contracts rule. They're more powerful than public contracts or anything else. These private trust contracts, which on an international level are called treaties, and all of those are trust agreements. So this is why you'll hear me more than once say that trust law is the highest form of law on the planet, because this is what even the bad guys adhere to the letter. They all adhere to this trust law relationships. Okay. All right. So we kind of went over the Magna Carta. Oh, I know what, there was one more thing. In 2013, England had a really big celebration for the Magna Carta. Okay. 800 years. And on TV, they said England called it the most famous void document in history.
Void document?
Void document, because the Pope voided it. Now, again, we're never told this. This is what was even surprising for me. And I thought I'd read a lot, but when I went back and really started reading these things for this talk, I was amazed. It's right in there. In the right, there's another thing he sends later where he tells the barons, you have no claim that is voided. I'm the one that has the right due to this Holy Alliance that was signed 2 years earlier. So thus it's null and void in the courts. Okay. And today, it's still thought of that way.
Well, we should point out, too, that the reason any of this works is the reason alchemy works, because nature proves that it works. Like when you use the example of what ants do or any other thing, nature has already shown that these systems work.
Yes. And I think humans, animals, all seem to have a social structure network in order for the whole to survive better. And again, I think nature came in the way of males and females in order to procreate, to have children. Then there had to be laws that people would abide by, or what we call maxims, understandings that everyone was going to follow. And if you didn't, there had to be recourse for the societal benefit. Okay, I'm not saying I'm a socialist. I'm just saying I agree with these concepts that there has to be these things in place. Otherwise, you would have anarchy all over the place. So 1302, Unum Sanctum, that was the first papal bull, in case you've never heard of this, he declared, now listen to what he says, quote, it is altogether necessary of salvation for every human creature should be subject to the Roman pontiff. It is altogether necessary of salvation for every human creature to be subject to of the Roman pontiff.
There's your necessity.
Everyone should have to be under the rule of the Pope. And I'm telling you that they've acted like it and treated all governments on earth as if you are subject to them. All right. In summary, the Holy Alliance of 1213 contains all the elements of a feudal land grant. The Vatican retained ownership of all land in England, Ireland, and all future lands of England. The Vatican granted administrative authority over to the king. So really, the king could never give away what he doesn't have. He can only give away what he does have. So when we win the war, you can see how this might get you to look things just a little bit differently of what we really got out of that deal. All right. So a couple hundred years later, 1666, the famous Sestakivi Act, due to the fire in London and the Black Plague, the government declares the doctrine of necessity and all estates are placed in trust until the rightful owner comes back. And this is the whole thing about these emergencies or this doctrine of necessity. If you read the law, it says it's supposed to be temporary. Never says it's permanent. It's always supposed to be temporary until the emergency is over. Then order is, as soon as order is restored, everything goes back to normal. And again, we'll get into this later, but in 33, basically the Constitution gets suspended until the national emergency is over. Unfortunately, that emergency as March 9, 1933 is still going on today.
Well, the necessity from 1302 has never gone away. And that was a man using the necessity that it's his idea that everyone needs to be saved.
Right. And again, everyone else on the world other than North Korea and Iran run by this system. It's just we got more when we during the Revolutionary War. That's what, again, makes our country so special, is we have a more of a right to the land than anyone else. Everybody else is under that total feudal relationship. England, Spain, France, Italy, Germany, it's all the same, okay? So July 4th, 1976, we declare independence from England. Our founding fathers were rich aristocrats who had been given large land grants from the king and were financed through the Bank of England. So again, I did a little more research than I ever done before. So you had a lot of people that came over that got granted these huge land grants to grow tobacco or to grow cotton. But again, all under, it was financed by the Bank of England, okay, fiat money again. And then in return, they had to send these crops back to England. So this was a business relationship, okay, basically, by people that were already rich over in England, who had estates and whatever, but they, it's like they were first on the list to get these big land grants in America. So again, it was all being done for commercial purposes in the colonies. In the Revolutionary War, we tried to dispossess the king's property, and many believe the king withdrew his soldiers in defeat, but in truth, he took the war into the courts. And again, there's more stuff I learned. The king took the battle to the courtroom and began seizing the estates of the founding fathers. So almost all of them had rich homes back in England. So what did the king do? He went to court under the principle of a sheet for trespass against the king and trespass on the king's claims. And the court was seizing all of their property back in Europe, which again, I did not know that at the time, after the 1776. So this goes on for the next 7 years until we get to 1783.
What power could the courts have had over in England beyond the king, though?
Well, they took the estates in England. They weren't taking the estates in America, but they were taking those guys that had the big land grants and who were in the colonies. They were taking their land back. The king was taking it back. I see what you're saying. You're saying, what authority did the king have?
No, I'm saying it's not like, I can't imagine that the court had independent authority and might have said, sorry, king, you've been beaten here. Just, you know, walk away, tuck your tail. Isn't it really the other way around, where that's just more of his soldiers to bring to bear?
I think the king was just suing the founding fathers personally for a breach of trust, not necessarily America. He was just trying to get back at the founding fathers, or the guys that were awarded all that land grant that helped take the land back from him.
That we don't typically view the founding fathers as rich guys that had been granted things by the crown, which they were.
And I'm not trying to defame them in any way. I'm just trying to give what I think is a more realistic look at why they ended up doing the Constitution.
Well, it's an important point. How do we end up with things like the Electoral College? It's because the rich guys didn't think the commoners had any skill to manage themselves.
Yes, exactly.
What was the claim that Rome was making on the fledgling United States? Anything at all yet?
Well, it goes back to the Holy Alliance Treaty. The Holy Alliance said all future lands. So when England sent people over here to colonize America, really the legal title was being held by the Vatican.
Well, that's what I figured, but then Americans started shooting people with red jackets on.
Right. Now, again, you and I kind of thought that, hey, since we won the war, we get everything, but it doesn't happen because things get settled out in the peace, or the 1783 peace treaty. Okay. And I think, again, we went over this, but I'll go over it lightly. Okay. So we send three guys, John Jay, John Adams, and Ben Franklin, again, of course, who happen to be very large landowners and happen to be esquires at the same time. Now, why was the Pope's representation at the treaty? There was three parties at the Treaty of Peace 7 years after the 1776, 1783. All right. So we bring three. They got a representative for the Pope and they got a representative for England. And again, you have to ask yourself, well, what's the Pope doing there? Well, the Pope, because of the 1213 Alliance, he had a controlling interest in America. So he had to be a party that would settle all of this out. Okay. All three people had to agree what was going to happen. To protect his interest in the land and the titles of the treaty, the seizures of the estates and the estates are given back. So if they sign the peace treaty, the estates are given back to the aristocrats. The ones that they had already seized in England are now, as a compromise, given back to the founding fathers.
Without control.
Right. At least they're given possession of it back.
Right.
And again, my big point before was always that they agree that America owes, at that time, the Bank of France $6 million. Okay. Later on, the Bank of England buys the debt from the Bank of France. But the point is, we agree, kind of like when every war, after a war, who's going to pay? World War One and World War Two, Germany was told they had to pay reparations to everybody. So now we got to pay reparation. We got to pay for the money that the aristocrats borrowed in order to fund the revolution, which I can understand it. Okay. But and again, what I read too is they had talked about this constitution and that they needed to sign that. And, let, and if they didn't sign that in the future, that the seizures would come back again. So the money issue was the biggest thing with the bankers, of course, the crown. They give America 7 years to repay the $6 million. And what's happened? They borrow, you know, we borrow another $12 million. So we're going to owe $18 million in 1790. And everybody knows it. All our founding fathers know it. They know that not only we do owe the money, but they're going to come over here and liquidate, take the estates back. They weren't going to have that. Now, do you understand maybe why they were having these meetings in secret? I don't think they wanted everyone to know the money idea, all of this stuff that was going on. And again, not that they're bad people. I get it. They're faced with losing everything or compromise. Well, the compromise really is to socialize all of this debt onto the people. Instead of the aristocrats themselves, they socialize it onto the people.
Without the knowledge or consent of the people, I think is the key concern here.
That is correct. Again, just like today, we're never told the truth about anything. You know, what a real bill is, or you got to pass it, then find out what it is. You're lucky if you can ever find out what's really in the bill. You know, we're never told the details. Our representatives always seem to be acting in somebody else's interest besides our own, right? It's unfortunate, but it just seems to be what happens. All right. So again, they're faced with this, oh my God, the estates, the money's due, and they're going to come seize the estates in America now and the ones back in England, unless we agree to form a national bank. All right. I think that's good. I'll stop at that one.
Okay. Jason, what do you want to add in here before we cut hour one?
What we've discussed so often, does it really all come back to Rome, meaning the Vatican, is still in control of everything back then and still now?
Yes, because the Vatican Bank owns the BIS. The BIS, subcorporation is IMF, subcorporation to IMF's Federal Reserve, and every Federal Reserve on every westernized country.
So does that mean that the great big conspiracy theory of people who wear little hats is probably not necessarily the truth?
Well, let's just say I think all roads lead back to Rome.
That's what I tell people.
Right. Now, one last thing. It was either in the 1700s, and this is in the church stuff, that the Vatican actually said, we've got enough money to last forever. And I believe at the time then, they calculated that the Vatican had somewhere in the range of $2 to $4 trillion in the 1700s.
That's pretty much an unlimited bank account in those times.
That's what I'm telling you. That's control. If everyone them paying up to them like they're the head capo, yeah, that's why they've got all the gold and all the money, and that's how they could do the Federal Reserve and the fiat money all over the place. That's where it all came from.
So let me make a couple side points before I wrap up hour one here. In the book that I've told people about called The Saudi Swindle, which is pretty well cited, there are some references to a supposed judge that I'm not crazy about, but there is a lot of good information in that book, and they do try to cite it. In that book, it is claimed that the mafia in this country was always reporting to the Rothschilds. And if you remember a few years ago, I was saying, how was it that a group of men who did everything that was illegal, from gambling to prostitution to murder and everything else, could just find this magical little place in the desert where no one could find them? Couldn't possibly go into Nevada and find where the crime was happening. Well, you're starting to get the picture. As everyone listening may know, entertainment is king in our world now. And one of the reasons for entertainment is being demonstrated in the Game of Thrones here. And why are they demonstrating these things? Because popularity normalizes ideas. When things happen, it's not out of the blue. Like, you don't say, I've never seen that before. It's shocking. Well, you've seen it 1,000 times before in 1,000 different movies. But anyhow, Jason, you want to add anything in?
Great hour one, and definitely looking forward to hour two.
KO?
I'm good.
All right, there's hour one of episode 599. We're going to take a short break, come back for hour two. Hour one is free to everybody at crow777radio.com. That is crow777radio.com. Members know to log in for the full access to the full episode. Members get access to all the forums, all the comments section, and threads. They can create all those things. Plus, they get exclusive access to stream the two-hour film that now has 10 awards called Shoot the Moon, covering all my old telescope work to include the lunar waves and the discovery of the second sun, which may come to be a big idea in the times we are now. Lastly, members have exclusive access to my telescope work. And not too long ago, by the time this comes out, I published the 10th member solar video with some really interesting content. With that, I want to wish you all a happy, healthy, and higher-minded new era. I hope to see you logged in for hour two. There it is, man. Cheers.
Belief is the enemy of knowing.